RNN.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means.
Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel.
Tonight's featured show is Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel. Welcome to the Republic News Network for our live national broadcast. You may call me Kelby, and tonight I'm going to be acting as your moderator. The RNN, which stands for the Republic News Network, has been doing this radio show since 2010, and it's always been a friendly introduction for the people of the United States Corporation. Here we go. It's true. The United States is a federal corporation, and their exclusive jurisdiction is in the District of Columbia. The Republic government was simply a bunch of U.S. citizens that, in law, don't have access to the Bill of Rights. And they realized they wanted to be Americans, as our founders and our law provided each and every one of us. See, we've been hard at work since 2008, and since 2010, we have successfully re-inhabited the original government vacated under Lincoln in 1861. I know, it's hard to understand. Don't worry. We are law-abiding, peaceful Americans and very pro-government, and we love our country. You can consider the Republic members are tired of the corruption that we see every day. See, we found in the law that there is two forms of government here on the land, and we did something about it. We are people. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, we have families just like you. We simply found some truths, and now we're sharing these important truths with the rest of the world. So get ready to hear things that sound amazing, and get ready to understand that you too are about to be a part of history. We welcome each one of you to Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel and your Republic, if you so choose. But before we go into our broadcast tonight, please bow your head in prayer.
Lord, thank you for this opportunity to just pray in a free nation. Lord, bless Dan, bless our guests, Mr. Wright, and keep us safe as we journey on a new topic and learning about digital currencies tonight. And we pray this in your son's name. Amen. Mr. Happel, I yield the floor.
Well, thank you, Kelby. I want to tell our listeners we've done this show one time before. On Tuesday, and we did it on the other program that I'm doing on the micro effect, and we felt like that would be a great tune-up to do a shortened version on Thursday night. So Jeff had an opportunity to really go through the entire background on cryptocurrencies, on our financial system. Tonight we'll cut back a little bit on the history leading to the cryptocurrency question, and we'll deal more with the actual structure of the cryptocurrencies, because I know that a lot of our listeners on RNN are already familiar with the financial corruption that we have with our fiat currency system. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jeff Wright. Jeff is a cybersecurity expert. He has been involved in the banking industry, helping them with cybersecurity. He has worked with the federal government on a number of different issues in that way. He's also very familiar with the financial institutions, and he is a very accomplished author. He has a book called The Citizen's Last Stand. And I would really highly recommend that our listeners go to Amazon and order that book, because it's a terrific book, and it has a lot of information that we're going to be talking about tonight on the radio show. So, Jeff, welcome to the show, and is there anything you'd like to add on your background that may inform our listeners why you feel that you're very accomplished at describing what cybercurrencies really are?
Well, thank you, Dan. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you, Kelly, for that introduction. And and prayer. It's good to open with a nice quiet spiritual feeling. To introduce myself, my background is I've really been in the cyber business all my adult life. It started out when I enlisted in the Navy. I was recruited, and the job I was recruited for was something I'd never heard of, which was called a cryptologist. And because I'd scored so high on some of my tests, they said, well, we want you to do this and this. And, you know, I was working on the farm at the time, bucking hay and moving irrigation pipe. And when they come to an 18-year-old guy and say, gee, would you like to work in embassies and all over the world and work in secret codes and intelligence and basically be an electronic kind of spy. And I turn around, look the other way at my dad and say, okay, well, I can buck hay and move irrigation pipe and sort potatoes and do the other things here in Idaho. And it kind of made a quick choice for me. I decided to sign up and try it out. And lo and behold, after 2 years of intensive schools through the National Security Agency and the Navy schools, I wound up working, going from bucking hay, going within 2 years I was overseas working in and out of intelligence sites and embassies and started doing systems work for the next 4 or 5 years. And when I ended that career, then there was absolutely nobody at that time in the 70s that I knew had any idea as to what was going on in that arena, because at that time, even in official Washington, the NSA was known as no such agency. And that's now they call it no secrets allowed to the outside world. But the NSA, and I worked that from there into a general systems career in the various portions of the IT industry, doing both network security and network development and design. And I wound up doing banks, financial systems, credit cards, Wall Street firms. I pretty much in the next 20 years ran the gamut as a general consulting systems engineer and chief engineer, building large-scale systems for the government, for classified projects, for commercial projects, banks, all over the place. I was basically worked in everything from the space program all the way through banking and industrial companies. It was a pretty broad spectrum career, because that first stage of the expansion of the information systems world was all brand new and pretty large and extremely interesting over a 30-year career.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know your experience literally covers just about everything in the financial industry as well. And I know that when the cybersecurity or the cyber currencies, and I know that term's kind of a misnomer, but when this stuff started coming out, you approached it as a skeptic. You approached it as someone who thought that it couldn't possibly work, or that there were going to be a lot of flaws within the system. And then you also, at the same time, felt like it may be structured much like the fiat currencies that we've got through our central banking system, and therefore would be easily corrupted. Tell us how you got into your research in the information that we're going to be passing along tonight on cryptocurrencies.
Okay, right. I basically retired from full time consulting work then by 2005, and had started a private software technology firm with a very talented partner and a senior systems engineer and programmer. And you spend a lot of time in that industry in order to keep up. You have to read technical magazines and publications and tech specs and all kinds of things on it. I usually cover between 7,000 and 8,000 pages of information a year just to keep current. And we ran across this thing in 2009, which was a white paper that discussed this idea. And we'd seen there'd been several iterations of different ideas, but we ran across this one that was called Bitcoin in late 2009, early 2010. And actually ran across a couple of friends who were programmers were actually doing what's called mining some of the first Bitcoins when the software was released. And in doing that, we realized that here was something, after spending all that time in the banking industry and studying credit card transaction processing and bank financial processing and large cash in the SWIFT system and Fedwire and all the different systems that go into the existing global financial system and banking system, I realized that the technology of Bitcoin was a disruptor. It was a huge disruptor, and the reason it would be a disruptor is because it maintained all of the actual qualities of money. The three primary qualities being a store of wealth, primarily, a medium of exchange, and a unit of account. And on top of it, it added two key features, and that was enhanced crypto security of all the transactions and data except for the public ledger sheet, the actual ledger that all the anonymous transactions is tracked on. That's what makes up what's known as the actual blockchain. And then in transparency, the specifications, most all of the software that's in the Bitcoin industry is what's called open source. And as open source software, you can go in and actually read the code of each of the products. It's available to view. If you have a programmer friend, they can go in and look at the technology offering. So with the transparency, and the security of the actual transactions, keeping the users anonymous, and then maintaining the three primary qualities of money, it was a perfect. In the internet age, it automatically became the perfect replacement for a fiat money system that, after 20-some years in the banking and financial and building the systems, I realized that not only were their transaction models antiquated, but they also were all running on fiat currencies, and that system had to fail at some point because it didn't maintain money as a store of wealth. And so automatically Bitcoin and anything that looked like it immediately became apparent it was going to become, at some point, was going to become very large.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you got into the Bitcoin technologies and stuff, you were skeptical when you went into that program, but after you did your research, you felt like it really is the possibly the opportunity to replace fiat currencies around the world and central bankers with something that actually is workable and quantifiable and verifiable. Am I correct?
Correct. And the key was, how long was the adoption going to take? Because I recognized also immediately, and my partner and a few other friends and associates that I had look into it, that it presented an extreme danger to the existing financial order because it had the capability of, it fundamentally boils down to a single issue, and that is, whether you're a credit card issuer, this is talking about the current banking and financial system, whether you're a credit card issuer or you're making markets for as a stock exchange, any kind of exchange, electronic exchange that runs today runs on a three-party system. You have an originator, you have the holder processor, and then you have a settler, okay, that executes the transaction between the two. There's three parties involved, and you always have an interface. Like if you have a Visa card, that's MasterCard. MasterCard has member banks that attach to its network, and they issue the cards. But MasterCard processes between the issuing bank and the settling bank. They process the transaction through their network, and they act as a third-party verifier to verify all the information for the transaction to go through. Well, in the crypto world, the third party is eliminated, and it's simply you who wants to send some funds and the whoever is on the other end to receive those funds as part of a transaction, and it's completely independent of any third-party bank or controller or transaction processor. It's a two-party system, and that takes the third party, which is in this case is primarily going to wind up being the banks, completely out of the picture. So it has extreme advantages and none of the disadvantages.
How safe is it, Jeff? I mean, that's one of the areas that I've had a number of people contact me and say, you know, how are we guaranteed that this is going to be a safe process and that it's not going to be hacked or, you know, purposefully destroyed by a government agency?
Well, it's very interesting that you asked that question. That is one of the key questions, and it's one of the key questions that you have in the existing system, because obviously we have, we hear almost routinely now of the banks and financial institutions that are getting hacked and broken into and funds stolen and all kinds of things that happen on a regular basis. So obviously, it's a concern in the existing environment, and it's a concern in the new world of crypto or cyber currencies. Well, one of the things, of course, that they've done from the get-go in any of the coin or what's known as the altcoin market, there's basically Bitcoin and then everybody that came after them. And all the new offerings after Bitcoin became known as the altcoin or alternative coins. They all realized that security is a tremendous issue. Almost everyone has embedded a high level of security. But if you look at the marketplace, obviously, just like in banking, you have the weak players and you have the strong players. The strong players will rise to the top and will have the absolute tightest security possible, the best encryption available, and the highest standards for maintaining that. And the difference is they don't have government support to survive for their coin products. They have only their reputation, and if they fail instantly in that arena of security, everybody knows it. And that's one of the things now, the problem actually with government security, with the government stamp on it, is they tell you that it's certified as secure, and then they don't even follow up and check it and know whether it is or not. And that's why you have all these hacks going on. The difference in the two basically is that in the cyber world, breaches of security and breakdowns in transaction models or virtually any part of the software become instantly known across the entire globe. I mean, it's literally within minutes when any hacks or things are found out and are immediately dealt with. The problem within the banking system, of course, is remember which one, I can't think of the name of the bank, that was a huge hack that went on in 2016, Wells Fargo. They didn't even disclose it for months because the regulators right. didn't make them. They didn't tell the regulators at first, and then the regulators didn't make it make them disclose it. But virtually every hack that's occurred in the cryptocurrency market has been revealed in less than 24 hours, with a couple of exceptions. So it's kind of like the UL Laboratories stamp of approval. UL is a private agency, and UL is much more highly trusted as a product, a guarantee of product quality, than any government agency today. It still is. The UL Labs is the most widely known certification for safety, and it's going to be true in the crypto market as well.
Okay. Well, I know one of the questions that I had from a friend was the digital coin is something that gets mined with major computers. And one of the problems that he sees is, what about the largest computers being government ones, and how they could possibly get in and get involved in the mining out of all these coins? And then also he had a concern about how Bitcoin wallets can be hacked. So, just a couple of questions that maybe you can help answer. What about the government going in and mining and basically hacking into this stuff through their big computers?
That's almost, you know, we almost got to that question, and I sidelined it when I brought up quantum computing in our discussion the other night.
Right.
Because of the power of quantum computers, and that's almost a topic in and of itself to discuss. But what I'll say here is that just as I found out when I was working in and out of the various government agencies and between government and private systems, one of the first things you note, and as you see go on right now, one of the problems that the government agencies have is the fact that so many of the private geeks out there are in fact more talented than many of the government geeks, and they're more numerous, absolutely more numerous. So the what you find in the industry, and what I found over the 30 years of my career, having played both sides of the fence, is that it is more often true that the private industry actually implements better systems than the government. And in fact, in this new field of quantum computers, with the massive, you can't even. It's hard to even comprehend what changes the quantum computing field is going to bring to the global IT industry, and particularly things like crypto security. If the government has it, it's almost guaranteed that private industry has it at pretty much the same time and or better. It used to be, when I worked for the agency, it was our watchword that we would stay 10 to 15 years ahead of, at that time, the Soviets and then the Russians, 15 to 20 years ahead of the Chinese and all of the various intelligence agencies, that we were always at least a few years, and at least at that point, 5 to 10 years ahead of private industry. Well, now everybody runs at breakneck speed, and it's always a horse race. So you can't ever say that that something is in the security business. You can never say that something is 100% secure, because nothing is. But you can say with a 99.99% confidence as to whether your system is easily hackable, hardly hackable, or almost never hackable. And most of the companies, they know that if they're going to survive in the crypto cash or the cryptocurrency world, they better be able to survive attacks from government, and they work their architectures and they work their systems and their software to the point where they invite. In fact, there's an offering coming up here probably in March that's going to be huge. I've read, and I won't disclose the name right now because they're still under non-disclosure and they haven't released their white paper, but there's a new coin offering, and it's going to be the biggest one to date, that they invite the government, go ahead and try, because they have some of the best cybersecurity people in the world working on the software and working on the security, and they literally have dared, when they released their first version, for them to try and crack it and see if they can break in, because they know that they are if not as good or better, if they're not better, they're at least as good, and they're definitely not any run no second to the intelligence agencies at this point with crypto security.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I know that a lot of our listeners don't understand what exactly blockchain technologies are, and that is really at the heart of what cryptocurrencies are all about. Can you give us a 5-minute thumbnail of how blockchain technologies work and why they're so so successful in the cryptocurrency market?
Well, as I said earlier, what this technology does is to eliminate the third party, and the reason that it eliminates the third party is it eliminates the central database and it eliminates the central control point. You don't have to, when you execute a transaction, either a payment or receipt of money through one of the crypto cash or cryptocurrency offerings, you don't have to go to a third party verifier and control and management point in order to execute that transaction. What you do is you enter your data, you do all of your personal, like PIN you enter your PIN and you set up the transaction, you get ready to execute it. When you execute the transaction, the data for the transaction, that is in the public domain, which is basically the transaction itself, the amount, the size, the amount, and the ledger type information that a bank would keep on their general ledger of accounts is entered into a public ledger, and that public ledger can be spread across literally hundreds or thousands of computer servers. It has no central source. It's tracked and kept record of on many sources simultaneously that constantly update and talk to each other wherever. And that's in this world, that's where a miner exists, because miners have to perform the function of verifying all of the blockchain transactions that are entered. And there's two parts to the process. There's the block, which is the actual data that contains the transaction information, except for who the users are. You don't have any idea where the funds came from, where they go to, where they're who originated them, who owned them, and who got them. All you get is the information that says there was a transaction. And that's what goes on this public ledger. As each of those, and then it's up to all of the miners that are all the computers, thousands of computers talking on the network constantly. They have to. They're the ones that check the data for accuracy, make sure that the transaction completes properly between the sender and receiver, and then post the data once it's been verified as complete on the ledger. And once and to do that, they have to run a set of calculations that say whether it's the data is they have to run some mathematical calculations that confirm to them that everything is correct. Data integrity is maintained, security is maintained, there wasn't multiple records created. Everything is correct in that transaction, and then it's posted to that ledger. And at the point that it does that, it adds the chain portion. Each segment of the blockchain is connected together in an ever lengthening record from the time that the software was released and the first transactions were run. For its entire life, a blockchain record will be maintained of all of the transactions that can be traced all the way back to the first transaction. It could be, and there could be eventually tens of billions, hundreds of billions of transactions that will all be maintained in the distributed blockchain record on the ledger. And that's what they perform. That's how the blockchain works between all of the processors that run the system.
Well, I know one of the comments that's been made by central bankers and people that are trying to make sure that the fiat systems continue and trying to marginalize what the cryptocurrencies are doing. But one of the arguments that they have is that this is technology and the crypto systems are ideal for people like drug dealers and people that are laundering money to be able to do that without any way of being detected.
You mean the way they do with cash now?
Yep, exactly. Right. And see, that's why they're trying to get rid of cash. But at the same time, that's also the only way that we can have any anonymity, really, is you know, through a cash world. So, your point is what I'm looking for you to kind of talk about the different pros and cons.
Right. Well, the first point is that none of the criticisms that you'll hear coming out of the central bankers concerning the fiat system have they ever fixed themselves. In fact, they're endemic. Whether it's counterfeiting in the cryptocurrency world, counterfeiting is known as forking. Okay, where a process forks into two parallel processes that run the same transaction twice. Well, obviously, if you run the same you create a fork and run the same transaction twice, then you've corrupted the blockchain, and you have generated the possibility of quote unquote counterfeiting a transaction, so that you spend a coin twice on the network. Well, that's one of the key factors that they have developed the process for in the blockchain, eliminating is the ability to fork any particular. That's been one of the chief criticisms, but it is one of the most inherent and integrated effects of any good implementation of a coin in software is going to preclude the ability to generate a fork. There's one's a forced fork and one's a native fork. A native fork is one that's based on a flaw that's in the original program that creates the blockchain. A forced fork is a hack. Somebody comes in and corrupts the software and creates a fork that the software itself, the coin software, does not detect. Okay, so the counterfeit coin is created in the original blockchain, goes ahead just like everything's fine, and suddenly somebody has this capability to create counterfeits. But I can tell you, after 30 years in this business and having looked at some of this, the technology and the math involved, number one, there is going to be no run-of-the-mill counterfeiters in this world. They're all going to have to be highly qualified software engineers to even attempt. And the better that the coin providers get at doing their job, plus encrypting it so it just can't be broken into to begin with, they're going to be many times harder. I have executed the transaction models that the central bankers use today. That technology is 20, 30, some cases 40-year-old code that's running embedded in the bank transaction system. Now, they've updated it. They've made it look pretty. But this is the whole problem, is many of their transaction models and their software, and this is why they're getting cracked and hacked all the time. It's garbage. What you're looking at is the difference in the crypto world. What you're looking at is state-of-the-art encryption, state-of-the-art security process, and state-of-the-art programming, all 30 years ahead of where many of the banking systems are that are based on old technology. So what that criticism is to me, based on my experience in the industry, is almost 98-99% bluff and 1% scared to death. And 1% possibility. But the possibility is much less than exists in the current. If I was a cracker or a hacker today, I wouldn't be concentrating on the crypto market. I would be continuing to concentrate on the fiat currency system that runs 30-year-old software, 20 and 30-year-old software.
Sure. And not only that, but it's so much larger in its dynamics, so it'd be much easier to get away with.
It's a much bigger target.
Yep, much bigger target. Well, I know that one of the comments that have come back to me several times is that the central bankers are just practically crawling out of their skins right now because they're scared to death of what's going to happen with the crypto market. And they're afraid that they're going to lose their stranglehold on the financial systems of the country and then ultimately of the world. Can you maybe tell our listeners what you see happening in that regard because of the disparities in the fiat currency markets and what you see as a possibility of the cryptocurrencies literally becoming the next big thing?
Well, if they're going to get there very soon. I just looked at the updated figures today. The total capitalization in the crypto world, in this market, there's currently about a little over 1,300 separate coin and called token offerings. The currency level, like I said, there's two levels to this market. There's the transaction level, the blockchain level, the ability to process these transactions in a secure manner. And the interesting thing is you have a whole lot of big banks that are trying to scramble to develop their own blockchain groups. To implement the blockchain in their own system and in the global financial system. But many of the programmers that understand that peer-to-peer blockchain processing, the level of programming, they've already been locked up by the ICOs, the initial coin offerings that are coming out of this marketplace. So they're already way behind, but they're scrambling to catch up with the technology that they see that they can try and use within the fiat currency world. The problem that they have is that the currency world itself is what's failing. It's not there's all the problems of cybersecurity and system security and things we see going on in the existing financial transaction network. But the problem in that world is at the currency level. in the national currencies that themselves, outside of the transaction model that the bank that the banks run, the three-party transaction model, that outside of that, the centralized control of the currencies by the countries is what, and the central bankers is what everybody is perceiving to see to be the problem. In the cryptocurrency world, there is no central authority. When a coin is issued in the cryptocurrency world, you know the operating parameters of that product, of that currency. You know what the total number of units that is going to be implemented when it's fully sold out or when it's fully bought out. You know, or you know what the release schedule is. Just like with Bitcoin, there's a little over 21 million total coins, and each coin can be divided up to 100 million times. And the lowest level unit is called a Satoshi, after the developer or developers. Nobody knows exactly who the developer was. He's euphemistically referred to as Satoshi Nakamura. And of course, everybody makes a bunch of assumptions, but nobody knows whether he's one person. He released it to the network anonymously and then let everybody test his software, look at the code, see how it worked, test all of the premises of whether this cryptocurrency idea worked. And as it turned out, that was in 2009. And as it turned out, in 7 years, it's working pretty well. And that's just scaring the absolute bejesus out of the central bankers, because they know they not only have aging technology in their transaction and settlement model that they have to deal with, but they also have the currency problem of the very currencies themselves that have centralized control by nations and central banks who can manipulate those currencies for their own advantage. It's mm-hmm. something that doesn't occur in the cryptocurrency world.
Right. And well, that's kind of the hallmark of the cryptocurrency world, is that it is, first of all, totally outside of the government control. And then on top of that it is based on free market principles, and the whole idea of the mining and all that is based on total transparency and free market principles, that any cryptocurrency has to have intrinsic value, and that intrinsic value comes through the transparency and the blockchain
technology process. The technology itself and the integrity of the technology and its usefulness, its utility, just like silver. It has gold or silver. The technology itself has utility. What you're going to see in the next round of currency releases is you're going to see embedded products that are part of the currency scheme. And that those products can initially be purchased with the currency that comes right along with it. So the software you get when you buy into a particular coin will give you a whole series of options of embedded applications that will offer their own utility and that will do things for the user that utilize the currency being offered. So
wow.
It's its own enclosed world, and this is just the beginning. People are not going; they're going to be astounded by I'm an engineer. I don't like hype, but as you dig further and further into this marketplace and realize what some of these really smart guys are doing, you come to figure out that number one, none of them are real fans of government. And control and outside control and regulations, but they do understand the necessity of maintaining an honest market. That's mm-hmm. not to say there's going to be bad players that show up in this market. When you have 1,300 plus potential offerings, I will guarantee you that there's a few bad players. But it is up to the market. They'll be found very quickly, and they will disappear very quickly because the market will recognize them.
Well, you know, that is a question, and we're going to run out of time as usual. We're going to run out of time before we get to really, really, really get through all this. But talk to our listeners, talk to me about those type of cryptocurrencies as an investment and where you see this technology going and what you – now, I understand you're not an investment advisor on this radio show, and that's not what you're intending to do. But I think our listeners would love to hear what your concerns are and what your feel is for what the market is going to be and what it is right now and whether people can look at it as a potential investment.
Well, thank you. And as I said, it's this. If people think you're going to hear the naysayers are going to say, well, this isn't going to last, it's a bubble, it's tulip mania. I can tell you right now that with already in a little over a year and a half time, the market capitalization in this market is already almost $1 trillion. It will pass $1 trillion of market capitalization for these companies shortly. It's astounding the amount, and what that represents is the weakness of the fiat currency system. People understand what's more and more people understand what's coming. And the ones that best understand are the ones that are running first into this technology because they get it. Now there's and this market is going to go through several phases. Right, it's not in the monetary phase yet. I want to put that one to rest really quick. Even though it's cyber currency, it's cryptocurrency. Even though it's referred to as coins and money, there is a process to the monetization of any currency. It happens with, you know, look how long it took for the acceptance and how long it's taken to continue to accrue the euro in a well-established system. When the euro was introduced, it was a tiny percentage. And even though that they were by law, the European communities had to adopt the currency, it started out, it wasn't even 1% of the market of currency market, and it's taken, 17 years, and the euro now comprises a little under 24%, and it's falling at this time. It's falling in its percentage of world's reserve currency and circulation.
Well, so, you're right. It took that long because, it became official, I believe, in 99 or 2000.
Right.
And it's had a hard time. It had a hard time getting traction because most of the countries, most of the people in the countries that the euro was in would prefer to use their old currencies.
Right, and that's compounded by the fact that, you know, they've gone through these difficulties of the last because of the European. It's tied to the European agreement and the European community. It's not just tied to a central bank. It's tied to a political system, and that is the inherent failure that's coming in all these currencies, whether that's the Federal Reserve or the European Central Bank or the Japanese National Bank. The problem is people are beginning to realize is that political control is every bit as bad as mafia control.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing, yeah.
Right. And so when they see something that is developed by some private entrepreneurs whose sole reason for being in the market, if they want to be successful, they understand is they have to provide an honest product, an effective product that has integrity and maintains its quality and viability in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And the reason that Boeing builds superior jets, or the reason that Apple builds superior phones and computers, or any of the companies, they don't do, if anybody thinks that they maintain that quality and integrity because some government overseer is standing over their shoulder, I mean, they're kidding themselves.
You're right. Yeah.
Right. If they want to make a profit,
that's counterproductive.
Right. If they want to make a profit, if they want to stay in business, they better have a damn good product.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure,
it better be
sure.
able to be maintained with integrity. And, you know, if something goes wrong, they got to fix it.
I think that's an area that I doubt that many of our listeners really fully appreciate, just exactly how rapidly, exponentially rapidly, the technology is advancing and how the cryptocurrencies are really tied in with that kind of, you know, that kind of exponential growth in the technology fields as well.
Exactly. I mean, I spent in 20 years of my career in the banks that I covered, you know, when I did the first, the banking system, since it's not competitive and it's not bound to keep up with technical innovation, when I went into the banking industry and started building my first systems in the 80s, I was replacing systems from the 60s and early 70s in the late 80s. The systems that were built in the late 80s are the ones that are run, and early 90s are the ones that are running the system today, and they need replacement again. See, they go through a very controlled, staged migratory strategy in the staid old central banking world, and it has a very well known formula, they want to get every last piece of profitability out of every last system that they can. So in a lot of cases, you're writing on 15-year, 20-year-old hardware and 20-25-year-old software. And in some cases, in the government systems, you're writing on 30- and 40-year-old hardware, hardware and software.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
Where you die if you do that in private industry. You will die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, let's talk about how the cryptocurrencies look as far as investment capability and if people should run out and start buying cryptocurrencies, and I know you talked about this the other day, whether we need to stand back and watch a while, whether we need to where we're at in the cycle right now is really in the early speculative part of the cycle. So would you talk to our listeners about that so that they understand you're not trying to hype or sell cryptocurrencies as a product. You're trying to get people to use their brain to do a little of their own research and start thinking in this direction.
Right. I mean, you know, it'll become apparent in short order for anybody that's a naysayer. The naysayers, every time they get on a forum or somewhere and they start coming back and saying tulip mania and you know, throwing all the other stuff out there, I go, you know, okay, don't believe me. I go, if you're not willing to go do research yourself, you won't know. But you will know the day that you go down to your merchant and you see the sign that says we now accept BitLedger or some, you know, one of the coin offering currencies. You'll see it with adoption. Just like when did you go down and buy your first Apple phone? When all your friends were buying them and had them, and they said, you got to get one of these. This thing is great. And that's when they'll realize that the world has been taken over and no shot was fired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that this really takes is adoption. As an investment strategy, you know, what I tell people is that this is the most, there's a acronym that's used in the coin market that's very appropriate. It's called HODL, H-O-D-L. And you'll see it everywhere because what anybody in the cryptocurrency world tells you, this is phase zero of adoption. And what people will tell you is when you buy into cryptocurrency, you better go HODL, and HODL is hang on for dear life.
Because
because you're about to go for a ride. The bottom line is, though, if you look across the entire, even considering, you know, the two or three or four fraudulent ones across the 1,300 and some current offerings, because obviously anytime there's that much money, bad players are going to show up. But like I said, they get weeded out pretty quick. But if you look at what the market capitalization sits at today and what the offerings themselves have done, it's really interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine in Thailand yesterday, and he buys on the Thailand exchange. And one of the things he told me is, you know, I got in his portfolio of coins right now, he has about 15, 20 different coins. And he goes, right now it's pretty easy to invest in the market because you can, but you don't know when the market is going to turn. So what you can invest in today and make some easy money on up front could turn bad on you tomorrow if you're not an involved, interested, and informed investor. But what he told me was, he goes, you know, I have two coins in my portfolio. One of them is just pure fraud, and he already knew that before he bought into it. It was pure fraud. The owners, I forget which company they were out of, I think they were out of Europe somewhere. The owners and the developers, the CEO of the company was in jail for fraud, and the coin was going up. It had gone up from a hundredth of a penny, it had gone up to 8 cents.
Wow.
From a hundredth of a penny, and the CEO was in jail.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
And you know what? He hadn't sold it because it was still going up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Like
okay,
any other investment. Mm-hmm.
Right. That is going to happen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what people just have to realize that's the stage of this market we're at is phase zero. We're not even at phase one yet. We're at phase zero. This has come on so fast, but it offers so many advantages, and there's so much money flowing into it. So, but as any investor should in any market, before they leap in with one foot, one toe to test the water or whatever, do it on an informed basis. Understand the basics of the market. Understand, and if you can go to the big exchanges, the early exchanges that are set up, there's about 80 of them, but the leader in the U.S. is called Coinbase.
Mm-hmm.
And Coinbase has tutorials that will teach you the market, will teach you some of the basics and fundamentals of the technologies. And if you just go and drop, put in Bitcoin or put in Coinbase or put in altcoins in your Google search, and you'll find instantly, literally, tens of thousands, if not hundreds or thousands or millions of sites with information that are now talking about altcoins and bitcoins and blog sites, and there's all kinds of places to go for resources and information and tutorials, and so you can understand it. But like I said, when you go to invest, hold on for dear life, because right now, until we get through a couple of years and start to stabilize with the more successful currencies, Bitcoin's the first to start stabilizing. In fact, Bitcoin probably looks more like a treasury note right now. That's where people are parking against them, and the market is starting to move into more of the altcoins, and Bitcoin is the stable currency. So,
you're right.
For dear life.
Well, and I think people are going to see this. It's going to be a lot more apparent how valuable and how important these are as some of these national currencies worldwide start to fail, because we pretty well screwed up the system with so much money being printed. And right at the top of the list, I hate to say it, is the U.S. system under the Federal Reserve.
Well, if you look and see $1 trillion in a nascent market that just is barely formed and has no rules. In a little over a year's worth of operation, having $1 trillion,
mm-hmm.
what do you think is going to happen when the system fully starts to fail?
Right, right. Everybody will head for it like heading for the exits.
And that's the thing, and that's why anybody that holds virtually anything in the early stages of the market has a fairly substantial probability of winning. But again, that's not a given. It's not a guarantee,
right,
and I wouldn't recommend that anybody just throw money into a market without knowing understanding where their money's going.
Right.
Towards
right,
what?
I agree. Yep. Well, Jeff, and as usual, we ran out of time. I'm going to give you about a minute to tell our listeners about your book and then wrap up in any way you want.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners and to talk about this subject. It is extremely exciting. We're even though it's bad times in some senses are coming, there's good times that are going to roll with it. The book that I wrote is Citizens Last Stand, Are You Ready? Was basically to outline all of the main features of which this is one, of what's coming in the future, politically, economically, financially, philosophically, and to discuss what some of these things were going to look like. When I wrote The Citizen's Last Stand, I pretty much was looking at trying to cover for people like myself, what do I want to know about what's going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years? And because of my unique position in the various industries and the intelligence structure, I came to know I saw a lot of interesting things that said, you know what, these things are going to happen. These things probably will happen, and these things may or may not happen. And so what I tried to do was condense that into a comprehensive text and try and describe for people politically, economically, what we need to do as a people to survive our politicians and our bad politics and bad banks and the other institutions. So basically, that's all I tried to do in The Citizen's Last Stand was to summarize and explain it.
Well, I have to tell our listeners, I've read The Citizen's Last Stand, and the reason that you're on my show, quite frankly, is I was so impressed with that book and the intelligent way that it was written and the areas that you covered with it. And, I'll just tell our listeners, this is a gentleman that really understands what's going on. He's been very involved. He's been involved with the political, the security, and every other area of really every important area of our government. And he understands what we've got to deal with. And this book is excellent. I just... people go to Amazon. I know it's available on Amazon, and it'll probably be the best money you'll ever spend. So,
I tell people that I'm in this world. I'm kind of like the accidental tourist. I both with intent and tumbled through a lot of these interesting areas, and just happened to. And I wanted to give that information to other people because I thought it would be useful for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, very definitely is, and it, as I say, it's very well written. I thank you again, Jeff, and hopefully we'll be getting some feedback from our listeners. Hopefully we can have you back on at some point, and we can do another discussion of this, and quite frankly, let's see what happens with the economy and the cyber currencies, and maybe give a little time for things to start to gel, and then that would be an appropriate time to have you back.
That sounds really good. It's been fun. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, you're quite welcome, and I want to thank our listeners and ask them to come back next week for another opportunity to help connect the dots. And with that, I turn the show back over to you, Kelby, and thank you.
Hey, thank you. And just one quick comment, Jeff. Dan, if I would have took the advice of a friend of mine and invested into Bitcoin in 2010, the amount of money that I put into foreign currency, my net worth would be about $90 million today. So it was probably one of the biggest mistakes in my life. But we are mining right now, and I'm in 100% agreement with you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude this week's show for Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel. God bless. Good night. We'll see you next Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific. Bye-bye.